Couldn't help and reflect a little bit on that last song. We've recently been talking about our core values, and specifically worship was just a number of weeks ago as being one of our core values. And I had this picture, and so we get to that line where it says, fall on your knees. And I had the imagery, and we read about it in the scriptures in Luke chapter 2, where the wise men in this story, so there's these grown men, they're coming from the east, and as they come across Herod, and they're basically saying, hey, we want to know where this child is supposed to be born. And throughout that series, they let it be known that they want to go so that they would worship him. And remember, we talked about the idea of worship is to basically take yourself and you put yourself under the authority of someone else. And here you have this brand new spanking baby, and there it is, and they recognize this fact that we're coming to put ourselves below this person who is nothing but an infant, a brand new born infant. And it's a remarkable picture, isn't it? When you recognize that there's something bigger going on that we worship. It's not just a person. There's like God has a hand in this magnificent sequence. And so they recognize that there's something about this child, and we will worship him even before he's reached the age of 1 day old. Well, actually, at that point, it would have been 2. Anyhow, so I was thinking as I was preparing this week, in college, there was this experience that I had. So what would happen in college is you would go to different churches at times, and this is beyond the bedside Baptist. We have pastor sheets and Reverend Pillow and things like that. When you had enough energy on a Sunday morning in college to actually get out of bed and go to church in the mornings. And what you'd find is that there's sometimes you'd go to these different churches here or there, different places. Very difficult to get involved. But there's one time in particular, it was my first year of college, where you go to this church. I don't even remember what church it was because I tried so many different ones, not getting connected. But there was this one family in particular, and they made a point to invite college students over. And we were invited over to this family's church, or family's home after church, and they brought us home, and they had made soup. Okay, so we have soup for the meal, and then at the end of the meal, I don't remember what kind of soup it was, at the end of the meal, they basically announced, okay, take your bowl into the kitchen and wash it, and then we need to use those same bowls for dessert. And it just was, it was striking because it's not something you really encounter very often when you're invited to someone's home. And yet I found that what we did, so we take our bowls, my friends and I, we go into the kitchen, we wash our own bowl, we dry it, and then we take it and we get dessert in it. And then I don't remember at the end, they may have washed it for us at that point. But it's striking, isn't it? A little bit when you look at this idea of hospitality. And I tell you, in that circumstance, in that situation in college, I felt like we entered into a part of their family just in that capacity. And it was just like, despite, it doesn't fit with our normal understanding of hospitality, and yet I felt like we stepped into a deeper relationship there than many other experiences that we've had with hospitality. I remember when I was a kid growing up, we'd go to a grandmother's house frequently. And when we go to a grandmother's house, it was inevitable, and if you're a grandparent, you probably have bestowed this upon your grandchildren regularly, but it was inevitable as you walk into grandma's house, there was always something that was being offered from grandma in the regards of cookies, treats, snacks, etc. It just was inevitable. So as soon as you stepped in, I don't remember what her house looked like. She was probably a fairly tidy woman, and it probably kept a neat house, but that was beside the point because that's not what I remember. What I do remember is walking into her home, and basically first things first, let's have some cookies. You know, and there was always this food that was presented with us whenever we went over there. As we got older, my brothers and I had to kind of earn our keep, if you will, and help grandma with hauling in wood and stuff in the house. But she would still have the practice where you come in first, you have the cookies, then you can go haul in some wood, and then I'll pay you for that, and then you can still have more cookies at the end. You know, and there's this reality. So as we look at this idea of hospitality, food is constantly there. You see it in the scriptures all the time. And we'll look at a few of those pieces here this morning. We're talking about hospitality. And maybe hospitality is a little bit broader than what our minds had been on. You know, like when you go into this family's home and they have you wash your own bowl before you. And I'm not saying that was bad. It was really remarkable. But it was abnormal. Or you go over to your grandmother's house and there's always food to be had. There's one friend that I have. And you know how we say sometimes when someone comes over, it's like, you know, hey, anytime. You just come on over. He takes it quite literally. I mean 100% literally, where suddenly there's a knock at your door and there he is standing there. He doesn't do it as often anymore because he lives in China. And so it's a little bit hard for him to come over. But it's one of those things where we actually really appreciate that about him, because sometimes we just don't get around to, you know, thinking to invite. But there he is knocking on our door all, it's been at night, super early in the morning. There he is. He pulls up on his motorcycle sometimes. Hey, I'm here. It's like, don't know what you had planned, but I'm here. And he just joins us in our activities. And there's something really special about that kind of a relationship where he feels comfortable enough and we feel comfortable enough. It doesn't matter in that situation what the house looks like. There he is. He's going to be there. Hospitality. Was it our doing? Not so much. It's more him stepping into hospitality and making it happen, but that's an okay thing. So we're dealing with this idea of our core values. As I said, we've been going through this idea of worship. And then last week, we started our 3 weeks on connection and the importance of connecting as followers of Christ to connecting with one another. And we saw Peter lay it out really well last week in his letter, and he talks about this idea of, you know, you are to love one another. And he doesn't stop there, but he says you are to love one another deeply. I mean, what a key word in this idea of love one another deeply. And we look at that word, and it's really this idea of lavishing, you know. And then he talked about this idea of loving one another, but in this context that Jesus Christ is that cornerstone, and not only just a cornerstone, but he is the living cornerstone. He's not like Buddha, who died and is still dead. Jesus Christ died for our sins and then resurrected, which is that is the key element in Christianity, just so you know. The fact that if Jesus Christ had not risen, we have nothing to worship. Let's just be honest. I mean, that's a big piece of it. So yes, we celebrate Jesus' birth. That's Christmas. We get that. We celebrate his death on Good Friday. Yes, but it's the resurrection piece that makes everything different in Christianity. And that is so key and so important. And so in looking at this, Peter recognizes about Jesus and said he's a living stone. He's not still dead. He's a living stone. And then we, in a sense, as we come to follow him, become living stones that are connected with him, creating a structure like we had that fireplace last week, but all kinds of different sizes, all kinds of different shapes, all kinds of different colors. And they come together forming what Peter called a spiritual structure. And there's something amazing that goes on, this transforming work that goes on the inside. It's a supernatural work, creating a supernatural power. And what was that supernatural power? Does anyone remember from last week? A supernatural power, ability to love. That is what makes Christianity different. As you, when you choose to follow Christ, he does a work on the inside that is a supernatural power. And it creates in you a capacity to love that's beyond, and at least it should be beyond, anything that we experience with the rest of the world. Because we even saw that the pagans, they love their children, but there's something different when a follower of Christ decides to love. And so let's look at that just real briefly. And Solomon recognized that. He recognized there was something different about this. And this is thousands of years before Christ came. And so Solomon recognized there's something powerful about this idea of love. There's something supernatural with it. And in Proverbs 25, verses 21 and 22, he says this: if your enemy is hungry, give him food to eat. If he is thirsty, give him water to drink. That goes contrary to really what our nature is. You know, our enemies, we kind of want to hold things over them. We want to hold on to retaliation. We want to hold on to resentment. This speaks differently than that, doesn't it? And now he goes in and he says, in doing this, you will heap burning coals on their head. Now that sounds like a little bit of the negative aspect. He's not saying literally go throw burning coals on their head, but he's saying that there's something powerful about love. That is the main piece here. It's not about heaping burning coals. That's not why, if you have an enemy, I'm going to show you kindness so that you feel badly. You're missing the point of it. The point of it is the love aspect. In other words, if you have an enemy who's hungry, what do? You give him something to eat. It's not so that you're throwing burning coals. That is perhaps one of those after effects that does happen, which causes the person to go, what? What's going on here? The emphasis is on the love aspect of it. He says, and then the Lord will reward you. And then we see Paul does something similar with kind of that same idea. This is just wonderful. We could probably just use this as our passage this morning, but I already had put it in print that we're going to use 1 Peter. So we're going to go ahead and go use 1 Peter. But this is really remarkable. Look at this. So Paul writes this, he says, let no debt remain outstanding. And there's other verses in this too, and some of us will take this and go, well, that just means we're supposed to be debt-free. It's so much beyond that, because there is a debt. Look at farther. It says, except for the continuing debt to love one another. Isn't that remarkable? It's continuing. In other words, what Paul is saying is, you will never be able to pay off this debt of love. You've been loved so much by Jesus, I mean, you can kind of keep paying it back. You won't ever have that paid off. It's like that mortgage that never ends. Sometimes it kind of feels like it, you know. But there we still have that end in sight. At least I hope we do. But those of us who understand this passage understand there is something about this love that's just like that is ongoing, ongoing, ongoing. If you're thinking like, wow, you keep talking about all this like, you know, love one another stuff. We've been talking about that for like years. Well, here's the thing. The scripture keeps talking about it, so I don't have really much choice but to keep following and telling you about it. So accept the continuing debt to love one another. For whoever loves others, this is great, great, listen. Whoever loves others has fulfilled the law. And look, he explains a little bit more. So he says in the commandments, you shall not commit adultery. That basically means if you're a guy and you're married, stick with your wife and vice versa, okay? That means you should not do that. That is part of the law. That only makes sense. Your love belongs there. He says you shall not commit murder, all right? That means as a parent, you are not supposed to do undue harm to your children, okay? You shall not steal. That means taking what doesn't belong to you. That means like stealing the cookies from the freezer when your mom's not looking. You shall not covet. That means you should not want the same iPhone as your friend has. You know, all of these things are part of that law piece of it. And he says, and whatever other commandments there are, and Paul is going to say, yeah, and whatever else. Okay, you know these, but yeah, whatever else. And then he says, and whatever other commandments there may be are summed up in this one command, love your neighbor as yourself. Quoted in Deuteronomy, Jesus also used the same passage when he was asked, what is the greatest commandment? And then Jesus says, the second is like the greatest commandment. Okay, love your neighbor as yourself. And what Paul is saying is all these commandments are summed up in this one. And he finalizes it and he says, love does no harm to a neighbor. Therefore, love is the fulfillment of the law. We can study the scriptures all we want. We can study the scriptures till we're blue in the face, but it comes back to love. And we need to learn love. We need to learn and understand the love that Christ has for us, and we need to learn and understand how we are to love one another. That's what it boils down to. I mean, the scriptures are good. I think we should study them. I like studying them. But if it doesn't come back to love, we see that in 1 Corinthians chapter 13 as well. The fulfillment of the law is love. And that's just absolutely fabulous. And so that kind of steps us into what we're at today. So we've talked about, Peter said, you are to love one another. So now what we're going to see here this morning, he's going to take this idea that you are to love one another, and he's going to expand it a little bit. And he's going to say things like, you are to show humility to one another. You are to show, and we're going to kind of wrap it up with this verse 9 of chapter 4, where he says, you are to show hospitality to one another. We're going to look a little bit closer at what that even means. And so here we start. We're at 1 Peter chapter 3. 8 through chapter 4, verse 9, I'm just taking pieces as we move through. So it's not going to be exhaustive in the sense. So this is what he says. Finally, Peter says this. Everyone must live in harmony. I love that. Harmony. You know, if you know anything about music, you know and recognize that sometimes two notes don't go well together, yet they can belong together in the same song, but they're in different places. In other words, there's this like workings together where some people are good at this and some people are good at this. Like those bricks, like those stones that made up the fireplace where you have some, well, that just doesn't fit with this one right next to it, but yet they're still part of that spiritual structure. So live in harmony. Some of your versions might say be like-minded. I like the word harmony better. In this setting, you know, because like-minded, sometimes we have this concept, well, if we don't fully agree on everything, then really the Holy Spirit's not with us. I don't know that I fully agree with that. Okay, I do believe that the Holy Spirit will lead us into a direction where we're unified in direction. That's good, but that doesn't mean they're always going to think the same thing. And what we have here is this idea of harmony. So a G chord and a C chord and a D chord may work together, but then you throw in an A chord, like, well, that doesn't make sense with all of them together. It's this idea we can live in harmony and we can make music. Because we are harmonious in the way we interact. And that doesn't mean that you don't have conflict. We have conflict all the time. But the way we handle those conflicts, and if you're not having conflict, you may want to take a look at that because honestly, then there might be something going on where you're afraid of it. But conflict is actually a very good thing when we can learn how to deal with it. Because when we come out of conflict, we find that we have learned to be more harmonious. Just interesting. So then verse 9. Peter goes on and he says, do not repay evil with evil. This is going on that same theme that we just saw with Solomon. It's going on the same theme that we just saw with Paul in Romans 13. He says, do not repay evil with evil or insult with insult. On the contrary, repay evil with blessing, because to this you were called. You were called to this. You know, sometimes we get so wrapped up into what's the Lord's plans for my life? Well, here you go right here. You are called to this, to love one another, to live in harmony with one another. And as we're going to see, show hospitality to one another. You are called so that you may inherit a blessing. And then we're going to slide down to verse 14. I'm giving a little bit of background as to what's going on with Peter in writing this. He says, but even if you should suffer, it's been known that or believed that Peter's letter here is written to encourage Christians who are suffering. And I do think that that's true. But even beyond that, I think what he's doing also in regards to that suffering, but he's also challenging us to understand our role in sacrifice. Because he keeps pointing back to the suffering of Christ, and I think you could almost interchangeably go with the sacrifice, what Jesus Christ gave up. We are called to suffer, but in the same capacity, we are called to give up some things. We'll look at that here as we look at hospitality. But even if you should suffer for what is right, you are blessed. Do not fear their threats. Do not be afraid. So the culture that Peter's writing this in, this letter was written and believed to be 60 to 64 A.D., so about 30 years or so after Christ died and rose from the dead. But the culture, it was still Roman controlled. And if you know your history, your ancient history, your Roman history, the ruler for Rome at the time was Nero. And in 64 AD, Nero did something quite astounding. He actually burned the city of Rome. Okay, you've heard that, you know, that's why you had this years ago when software was just coming out and you could actually burn CDs, you could copy them illegally. They had this software program called Nero, which was basically this burning idea. That's where it comes from. But this, Nero was known to have burned the city of Rome in 64 AD, right about the same time that Peter was talking or writing this letter. And so there was intense persecution because what ended up happening is Nero burned the city because he wanted to rebuild a greater city. But he burned the city and it just went way out of control. And when that whole city burned, it was just like, wow, that was not expected. He didn't want it to fall onto him. And so who did he blame? He blamed the Christians. And then to demonstrate his hatred of the Christians, what he actually did is he tortured them. He caused great suffering. And one capacity, one way that he would do that, he would actually take someone known to be a Christian and he would put them on a post, and he would cover them in tar, and then he'd light them on fire so that they would light the city. They were used Christians as street lamps, if you will. I mean, it's just gruesome. And so this is what Peter's writing to. It's like, if you suffer for what is right, just understand this. It's okay. It's okay to suffer. It's okay to sacrifice. Because we have something. We know that there's something better and beyond. I mean, that sounds miserable. I mean, what kind of culture do you have to live in where that's what your encouragement is? It's like, it's okay, by the way, just you can handle it. If you get tarred and you get stuck on a post and they get lit on fire, just know that there's something greater going on. That's not super encouraging. Yet, when we have this capacity to understand and know a little bit beyond what the here and now is, it's like, wow, that's really remarkable. And so we look at this culture that Peter is writing to. And so he says, do not fear their threats. He's talking about Rome. Do not fear those who look at you from the outside and cast judgment on you. Don't fear them. You have something that they can't take away. They can take away your life. They can take away your comfort, but they cannot take away your eternity. And so he says, do not be frightened. Verse 18, we slide down a little bit farther. And he goes on and he parallels this. So understand this. So for Christ suffered as well. Understand that Jesus Christ, under that same in Roman control, Jesus Christ suffered immensely as well. And this is where I like that word sacrifice because I think sometimes we get so focused on Jesus suffered, Jesus suffered. Yes, he did. I mean, I'm not diminishing that one bit. He suffered the most with the weight of mankind's sin on his shoulders that we have not experienced. We see it in Hebrews, and this is a wonderful thing. We see it in Hebrews where Paul writes to us and says, you think you're suffering? Have you yet suffered to the point of death? Have you yet suffered to the point of Christ? Have you yet suffered to the point of shedding your blood for our sins? And the answer pretty much is no. So we think suffering happens here, and this is in America. Suffering is happening all over the world, much greater here. But even in the midst of that, suffering, sacrifice hasn't happened like what happened with Christ ever because of the weight of the sin. Don't lose sight of that. So for Christ suffered once for sins, the righteous for the unrighteous, to bring you to God. Understanding that greater purpose. He was put to death in the body, but made alive in the spirit. They killed him, but that wasn't the end of him. And they could kill us, but that's not the end of us because of the resurrection of Jesus Christ, where he conquered sin and death. That is so key. And it is just so, so key. So then we slide down, we get into chapter 4, and we're going to cover some of these verses, and we're going to kind of reach that highlight in verse 9. it'll be a lot of fun and exciting. So grasp this idea where Peter's going, the suffering, the sacrifice, those things are in here. And now he's going to talk about this interrelation with us. And he says, therefore, since Christ suffered, in other words, since Christ sacrificed his own body, he gave it all up for us, since Jesus was able to do that, he says, then arm yourselves also with that same attitude. Despite the fact that the Roman government is persecuting you and is crushing you, it's okay. I understand that that's going to happen. It's going to be very uncomfortable. But he says, arm yourselves with that same attitude that Christ had, because whoever suffers in the body is done with sin. As a result, they do not live the rest of their earthly lives for evil desires, but rather for the will of God. Something changes in our heart, where now it's no longer me living for the here and now, but I'm living for something beyond. And that is a key when we come to hospitality. And then it goes on to say, for you have spent enough time in the past doing what pagans choose to do. You've lived that life. You know what it's like. Living in debauchery, lust, drunkenness, orgies, carousing, and detestable idolatry. They are surprised. They, as in those who are looking at Christians from the outside, they are surprised that you do not join them in their reckless, wild living. And then they heap abuse on you. For standing for what is right, for doing what Christ has asked you to do, you know that the outside world is looking at you going like, you're boring. Yeah, you're pathetic. Your God is weak. You're just shallow. You're weak-minded. You're intolerant. They throw all of these things at us, and that's okay. Peter tells us that that's going to happen. He says, recognize this. You lived like that once, and now you have Christ in you, and so it has changed. He has done this work on the inside. We get to verse 8 then. Two left in 1 Peter, and then we've got a little bit in Mark chapter 2. Peter says, above all, okay, all of the suffering and all the sacrifice, above all of these things, be mindful of this. And this is what he says, above all, here it is, same words we looked at last week, love each other deeply, lavishly. Love each other in a way that doesn't make sense to the world. Because when the world looks at that, then their jaws will drop and they go, what in the world is wrong with you? And that's exactly the point. Because we don't fit with what the world's standards would be. And that's a good thing. We're like that square peg in that round hole. And that's not that we want to butt heads with people, but that's what we want to be. Notice, not for ourselves, but pointing back to Christ and who he was. We looked at it last week when it says that we are that royal priesthood, that holy nation, a peculiar people. One of my favorite phrases in all of Scripture. We are a peculiar people, something that causes people to go, huh? Why would you bless someone who just totally abused you? Why would you repay that evil for good? Why? That doesn't make sense to me, because I live in this culture, and yet we do it, and it causes these questions. And it's because we have the ability, the supernatural power, to love deeply. And he says, love each other deeply, because love covers over a multitude of sins. And here it is, verse 9. And I just find it fascinating that he sticks this one in there. And he goes on to say to these people that he's writing to, which is both Jews and Gentiles alike, and he uses this word hospitality. He says, offer hospitality to one another without grumbling. You know what that means? To offer hospitality means you have to give up something. There's that sacrifice piece that's involved in hospitality, at least in true hospitality. It's going to cost me something. Okay? Hospitality is not free, but yet it's extremely good. Like when we went to that family's house and we had to, they gave us the food, okay? It cost them something. They didn't have enough bowls to be able to offer us those, set them aside, here's enough. That's all that they had to offer. And so then they said, go wash up the dishes. There's nothing wrong with that. It's no less hospitable to ask us to wash our own dishes, because what's the point of hospitality is the love deeply part, not the washing or being served part. You understand the difference? Hospitality is all about the relationship piece. It's all about this connection piece. And if I'm so worried about other things that's going on around me and not the relationship piece, I'm not really understanding hospitality. I know that's difficult for some of us. It's probably difficult for all of us in some capacity. And we'll talk about that difficulty here in just a moment. But briefly, the word hospitality, you break it down in the Greek. I have it here, but my notes are so far gone now. But the root word, I'll tell you this. Okay, the root word, there's two kind of different versions of this word hospitality. One of these versions basically refers to this idea of love for strangers. That's how it would be defined. Love for strangers, which is very interesting, isn't it? Because we look at hospitality in the sense of fellowship, and there's nothing wrong with that. I'm not diminishing that one bit. But there's this idea of this hospitality is intended to be offered to something out there, to someone who I don't yet know. You get that? So that's one aspect, and that's actually the aspect I think that's used here. It doesn't really matter because they go so in, they're very focused and inward connected. The other word that's used for hospitality, and again, they have the same root, and I'll tell you that in a second. The other word basically means to love with intense generosity. It's this idea of loving sacrificially. It's like loving to the point of where I'm willing to give you whatever it is you need. That's really what hospitality is. And so we could kind of combine those two, and we can look at this idea of hospitality, which isn't used that often in the New Testament, just to be clear. And so you can take these, you can really get a good, close definition of it, would in a sense be loving strangers with an incredible generosity. That's kind of a cool thought. The root word for both of them is phileo. If you know you're Greek at all, you know phileo means brotherly love. So the root word of hospitality is love. And it's love in such a way. What's interesting, and this is what we're going to look at here now, we'll jump up to Mark chapter 2. So Jesus has this encounter. He has a number of these encounters, but this is one that's very, very key. Understanding that this idea of brotherly love and what we're looking at, what Jesus is basically being accused of is being friendly to those who he should not be friendly with. It's basically what he's saying is, you are friends with bad people. That's what we're looking at. So here in Mark chapter 2, maybe fairly well known, at least the idea of what we know about Jesus, if you've studied Jesus at all. So once again, so Jesus went out beside the lake. So they're walking outside the lake. They're going down this majorly traveled road. And as they're walking, a large crowd is coming behind him. Okay, this was not uncommon. We saw it after Jesus had fed the 5,000 people. He had a crowd that was following him. A lot of people liked what he did. In this particular situation, just preceding this in the Gospel of Mark, there's a great healing that takes place. And so all these people see this power that Jesus has. It's like, wow, this guy is really something. And so they follow him. And so as this great crowd make, and that's important to note that there are a lot of people there, they're following Jesus as he's walking down by the lake here. And they come, and he began to teach them. And as he walked along, he saw Levi, son of Alphaeus, sitting at the tax collector's booth. So on this major thoroughfare, it's a major road. This isn't just some back trail. They would set up these tax collector booths, in which the tax collector would sit there, and then in order to come by, you would have to basically pay your taxes. And they would just exorbitantly charge people money. And so as people are walking by, literally this is one of those things where you didn't want to make eye contact with them because you knew what was coming. And so you would, in a sense, if all you could do, it's like knowing that you just took some bubble gum from the store, which we would never do. You took the bubblegum, and as you're walking out, you see store security, or you see a police officer. You will not make eye contact. Or you've just been driving in your vehicle, and you've just sent a text, and you know you're not supposed to be texting while driving, and you have this police officer that pulls up next to you, and you set the phone down, and you kind of look down, and you don't make eye contact with them whatsoever, because you don't want to be found out, if you will. And that's kind of the capacity here. So as people are passing by, literally they're avoiding this Levi as best as they can. They would take the long way around. They would just like, I don't want him to get close to him. If he sees me, he calls me out on it, then I'm going to have to pay all kinds of this exorbitant money. I don't want that. They just despise him because the other aspect of it is Levi was a Jew and he's working for the Roman government. And he's taking the Jews' money, keeping some for himself because that's how he does so well. He gives the rest to Rome and he's just looked at as like, you're a traitor. You call yourself a Jew, you're a traitor. We hate you. We absolutely despise you. How can you call yourself a Jew and do what it is that you're doing? And yet money was most important to him. That's the situation. So here comes Jesus, and he sees Levi there, and he says to him, he makes contact with him, the one who no one else wants to make contact. Here's Jesus, and he makes this contact with him. And not only does he make eye contact, not only does he make voice contact, but he actually says, hey, Levi, come follow me. Why don't you join the group here? And we don't know the circumstance if there's any more interaction, but it does say that Levi got up and followed him. I'm sure Levi would have heard some of the rumors already about this Jesus, but he gets up and he follows him. So while Jesus is having dinner, so with big old gaps, so somewhere they went to Levi's house. Jesus is now at this hated man's house, and he's having dinner. Remember that food thing we talked about right away when it comes to hospitality? Food is always involved. Just like grandma, when you walk in, here, kids, have some cookies. Always there's food involved. And so here Jesus steps into this idea, in this picture. Now he's having dinner at this guy who's hated. And notice this, Levi apparently has some friends or is having a party, whatever the case is, because who else is there? Many tax collectors. Do you think Levi invited Jesus, or do you think Jesus invited himself? I lean towards, I think Jesus invited himself. He did it with Zacchaeus. He said, Zacchaeus, come on down. I'm going to go have dinner at your place. Huh? I didn't clean the house. That's going to be a problem. You got to give me a few minutes. Why don't you just stay out here on the porch? I'll step in. I'll make sure I clean everything up. And then maybe you can come in. And I don't think that's what's happening. The floors are probably dirty. Kind of a joke because they're very dirt floors. So many tax collectors are there, many hated people, and it says, and many sinners, and they were all eating with him, and the eating aspect was a sign, you don't eat with enemies. Kevin Bywater, he's the founder of Oxford something Learning Center, I think, Oxford Learning Center, it's across the pond, we saw him, and he was teaching at the Summit Ministries when Sarah and I went almost a year ago. And he makes a statement, the idea of the importance of food. And he makes this statement. He says, basically, I think he might have used the word impossible. And maybe it's not totally impossible, but just think through your life. And he says, in a nutshell, it's impossible to fight while eating food. If you do, it's food fight, and then you get sent to the principal's office. But he said in a nutshell, it's kind of impossible. So think about it like, okay, you've had a spat with your spouse. You sit down at the table. Let's be honest, at least for the meal, the conflict seems to diminish, doesn't it? Where you can't really fight and eat at the same time. And maybe some of you are more skilled at it than I am. But he makes this comment like food is a diffuser when it comes to this idea of conflict. The importance of food and hospitality is paramount. It's so important. And that doesn't mean that we have to offer something lavishly. It can mean like grandma pulls out some cookies. And it's a really important piece that when you have hospitality, when you have fellowship, this food brings in, even if you're having some conflict with someone, it's like, wow, we can eat together. We can discuss together. We can build relationship. Food and relationship go so hand in hand. And so what Jesus is really doing is he's having friendship. He's having relationship with sinners. He's having relationship with people that the world looks at and goes like, you shouldn't do that. That's not okay. And yet Jesus does it. He's putting himself in a very peculiar spot, very difficult situation and a predicament. And he was eating with him and his disciples, for there were many who followed him. Verse 16, when the teachers of the law, who were Pharisees, saw him eating with the sinners and tax collectors, they asked his disciples, why does he eat with tax collectors and sinners? Why is he friends with them? On hearing this, Jesus said to them, it's not the healthy who need a doctor, but the sick. I have not come to call the righteous, but the sinners. And so Jesus understands and recognizes the importance of relationship beyond the idea of what is to be seen and right. And so I have a little illustration. This might go very poorly and I might fail at it. If I fail at it, I'm sorry. This is a little bit out of my comfort zone. But here's this idea. We have our monetary. We have the here and now. This is what we live for. Okay, this is our earthly life. And sometimes there's some things that we look at that are very important to us. And in regards to hospitality, maybe we attribute, certain things, okay? In other words, what holds you back from hospitality? Well, maybe it's the cost, okay? Maybe I just can't afford to have people over. And so maybe it's the cost of what keeps you back. All right, that's a reality. Maybe it's this idea of, I'm embarrassed. I'm embarrassed for people to see me, so embarrassment maybe is what keeps me from living that life of hospitality. I'm afraid as to what others will think, so it's fear. I'm afraid what others will think if I invite them over to my house. And maybe it goes the opposite direction. Maybe one of our struggles, and we don't even know it, for hospitality, maybe it's show. I love having people over my house because I want to show them how I live. I want them to see how wealthy I am. Maybe that's part of what's going on in our maybe misconstrued conception of hospitality. And maybe it's this idea of I don't like spills. And if I invite a family with small children, they might spill. And I don't handle spills well, and it makes my eyes twitch to think about it. Maybe it's this idea that I have things in my house that I don't want to get broken. okay? You ever have someone over your house? There's a story here. Remember LeClaire's, our good friends LeClaire's? They moved to North Dakota. I know. Even good people can live in North Dakota. Sorry. I'm sorry for you North Dakotans, Marla. If you're listening, I'm so sorry. But North Dakota is a wonderful place. I'd love to drive through it sometime. Okay. But maybe there's this. So we had the LeClaire's over. This was, well, I should say, Sarah had Lindsay, mom, over. And Hank, how old were they, Sarah? Two? Three. Okay. Isaac and Hank, they were good buddies. 3 years old. 3 years old. They call them, say the terrible twos. It's not. It's the terrible threes. Okay. I know it doesn't sound as fun, but it is. It's just awful. Okay. And so Hank and Isaac were there, and Lindsay and Sarah, and they were just getting to know each other. They were having hospitality. They were having fellowship, if you will. They were building a relationship. Well, in the midst of it, the boys downstairs were having a lot of fun. Some of you know this story. We're having a lot of fun. New carpet downstairs. What's not to have fun on new carpet, right? Okay. Sarah also had, not locked away as well as it should have been, ink pads. So the boys decided to take those ink pads, and they stepped in the ink pads. Now, just standing on the ink pads would be bad, right? No, they have to walk around the new carpet with ink pad feet. And so footprints all over. And I'm telling you, this carpet had been down for like a week. I mean, it was like that new. I didn't handle it as well as you would think, you know? We have those little carpet shampooers, you know, the Bissell. It got that machine got a name. It was after this event. Hannah, who was a little bit older, called it the angry machine. Because this machine is only used when Dad is angry. That's sorry. Okay, am I being too vulnerable? That's kind of reality. So it was the angry machine, the angry tool. Okay, but so they walk around the brand new carpet. Oh, that was bad. So Sarah and Lindsay were down there. They sent the boys upstairs. They're down there cleaning up, doing the best that they can, which I appreciate the effort, but it wasn't great, okay? That's where they didn't get the angry tool out soon enough. And while they're cleaning up downstairs, they hear upstairs, psh, giggle, 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 psh, psh. They go upstairs to find Hank and Isaac taking glass ball ornaments and smashing them on the floor. Psh. Lindsay just said, I think we're going to go. But I'll tell you this, okay? So that's not what you want to have happen in hospitality. But sometimes it happens, right? But I'll tell you this, the relationship that took place between the two of those women and the families together, unmatched by any. And did that happen because, you know, we had everything perfect in a neat home? No. It happened because we got messy together, if you will. You know what I mean? That's powerful. So what is it that keeps us? Because sometimes if I just focus on the carpet, because that's a struggle of mine, okay? I don't like spills. You guys know that about me. You know where I'm at when it comes to stuff like that. I don't do well with it. I don't like inviting people over just so you know, and it's not your fault if this has happened, okay? And things get broken. Because it's like that stresses me out because then I have to deal with it. I either have to fix it, I have to replace it, or I have to just learn to deal without it. I don't do well with that kind of stuff. And so when I came home that day with the messy carpet, I was not in a good space of hospitality. It was more like, okay, they can never come over again. Which didn't happen, but that's a struggle. And that's one of the things that can sometimes keep us from hospitality. So here's the idea. Get a match first. If I take this monetary focus on hospitality, this is everything. This is what keeps me from hospitality. This is what I have to spend my time. I don't have it because I'm afraid of things getting broken. Maybe I'm afraid of the messes. Maybe not having the house ready is what keeps me from hospitality. Maybe it's my attitude. It's like, oh, I do hospitality, but it's a true hospitality, if I'm inviting people over for the show, it's about relationship. And so I have a choice. I can either stay in the monetary and focus on this, or I can understand that there's something greater going on, that there's a relationship that actually exists. And if I can choose to find that there's a relationship that actually exists, then I can get rid of the monetary and find something much more valuable. And what Jesus wants us to understand, and when it comes to hospitality, there's a much bigger picture than just what's here and now and what I see. And Jesus is calling us, we saw it in the scriptures, he's calling us to be like he was. He's calling us to love the way that he loved. He's calling us to act and have the same attitude that he did. And he loved lavishly, even people that no one else could really accept and deal with. And that's what we're called to.